is your land, and this land is my land. From California, New York Island, from the Redwood Forest, and the Gulf Stream waters, this land is made for you and me.
Whenever you hear somebody exclaim how beautiful Oregon is, please tell them it's because of Oregon's land use laws.
I roamed and rambled and I followed my footsteps.
Good morning. This is Wednesday, November 1st, 2023. You are listening to Keeping Oregon, Oregon. I am your host, Aileen Kay. We air the first Wednesday of every month for 30 minutes in the 8 a.m. hour. We are part of KMUZ's Willamette Wake Up Team. We focus on Oregon's land use planning system and also on sustainability issues. Our engineer is Mark Albert. Thank you, Mark. Today I am honored to have as our guest Dave Boudreau, retired professional wildlife biologist who has created a 30-acre haven for wildlife on his rural land near Turner, Oregon. Before that, Dave worked for 10 years as the manager at the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife's E.E. Wilson Wildlife Area, which is about 10 miles north of Corvallis. There, he and his team worked on a special project to disrupt the former military base's storm drain system and restore the site's wetland function. On an ongoing basis, Dave oversaw the health of the flora and fauna in the area. Of special concern was the constant proliferation of the beautiful but invasive plant, Scotch broom. We can all identify. The motto at E.E. Wilson was "No blooming broom." I got to know Dave when he was on the ballot for the board of directors of the Marion Soil and Water Conservation District. Since I take voting very seriously, I called Dave to find out his views. Being totally impressed, I spread the word in our area as much as I could so he would be elected to that position, and he was, and he's still on the board. I have since taken the liberty of contacting Dave every time I need to identify a bird in my area. He knows immediately the species and if the bird is male or female. This comes in very handy for me. Thank you, Dave. So, Dave, we're really here today to learn how you created a very special 30-acre USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service conservation easement on your property. The easement supports needed wetland prairie habitat for flora and fauna that most of us destroy when we humanoids clear land to live somewhere. You have created habitat for 130 species of birds and numerous wildlife species, numerous prairie flower species, numerous trees, plants, and bushes. You also have four ponds that now support 10,000 Oregon chub. That is quite an accomplishment. So, Dave, when and how did you come up with this idea to create a conservation easement?
Aileen, first, thanks for inviting me. I always enjoy the opportunity to talk about our easement. And really, it was something that evolved over time. It wasn't an initial plan. I knew we wanted to do something, or I wanted to do something with the property to benefit wildlife and habitat. And there was different options, but our property was historically agricultural property. It had caneberries on it in the past and was being currently used as pasture, but it was marginal farmland. It had a lot of wetland characteristics. So one of the first things I checked into was with the Natural Resource Conservation Service, their wetland reserve program. And it's not a sure thing to be accepted into that. There's a number of criteria that have to be met. And even after going, there's a number of surveys too that some of them are beyond our control. For example, if there were leaky underground storage tanks within a mile or two of our property, that could have disqualified us or something. So there's a number of things, but it turned out that we did qualify and we applied and were accepted. And then it was just evolved over time from there. And even as it was going on, things evolved. For example, with the NRCS that we were going to try to restore the wetland function of the site, it had been tiled in the past trying to drain off some of the water. And so we were disrupting tiles. And then one of the Fish and Wildlife Service personnel said, what do you think about introducing Oregon chub onto this property, which was an endangered fish species at the time? I thought, well, we didn't have an issue with that. And so we thought, well, we could do that. But then the NRCS said, you know, we didn't include that in our funding and that we anticipated that. And so then we applied for a small grant from the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board, and were successful in getting that so we could have some deeper portions in the wetlands that would accommodate the chub with permanent water year-round. And so that's just an example how things kind of evolved over time through the process. So it wasn't something that set out to do right from the get-go is what it looks like now, but it just evolved over time.
And where is the office of the NRCS?
The NRCS has a office off of, in town here off of Hawthorne. It's kind of behind the old Costco location. There's a Farm Service, FSA, Farm Service Agency, and NRCS office together. It's all part of the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Huh. I had no clue. Since then, what other agencies have been involved in this whole
There's been a whole bunch. The two primary ones initially with the easement was the NRCS, the Natural Resource Conservation Service, and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Both of those agencies worked together to implement the Wetland Reserve Program, or what's now Wetland Reserve Easement. In our area, that's how they do that. But there was a number of agencies. Of course, we applied for and received water rights through the Water Resources Department. Division of Department of State Lands was involved for wetland delineation things. With that grant that we got from the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board, it was administered by the Marion Soil and Water Conservation District. So that's how I first became introduced to the Marion Soil. I really hadn't been introduced to them before. And so they're the ones that administered the OWEB grant. And then over time, there's been a number of other agencies. We've done early on, there were some prescribed fires done. And there was even like the Confederated Tribe of the Grand Ronde Indians were involved with the prescribed burn. The Bureau of Land Management they have the expertise in some of these things. And so Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife was involved too, but probably in a smaller way than on other ones because we were trying to avoid the appearance of conflict of interest because I was employed by the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife during that time. But they often do play a bigger role.
Huh. Also, I want to remind our listeners, we have done a few shows regarding Marion Soil and Water Conservation District, and Dave has been on discussing it. It is just a hidden gem. There are so many neat things that they do, and even if you don't have a property that needs some kind of assessment or special program, they have educational programs all the time, online and sometimes in person. They also have a very good couple pages on their website about Dave's conservation easement with gorgeous pictures of all that is there now with descriptions of what everything is. So I hope you'll look.
Yeah, I think it's also just a great resource for if anybody's interested in doing easement or has any question about what they can do for conserving soil, water, or habitat, it's a good first stop is the Marion Soil Water Conservation District. Because if they can't help you, they can direct you in a direction that hopefully you can find help. And it's also starting a new program. It's called Small Habitat, I think, or Little Habitat. Mm-hmm. So people in town just may want to do something, you know, trying to get at some of these urban and suburban areas that can also participate in conservation.
Neat. And their office is in Staten.
Correct.
But I think they want you to call before you go over.
Right.
Because I think they're out in the field a lot.
They are. Yep, they are. Yeah, just make an appointment. There's usually someone there at the office during regular business hours, but it's best to call ahead and make an appointment.
Neat. And what were the costs involved, and was there state and federal funding available?
Yeah, for the actual wetland easement, there was little out-of-pocket expense for me. Our biggest expense, I guess, is just the deed restriction that's placed on our property. I mean, we can't develop it in the future. Our easement is permanent, so there's a deed restriction that goes with the property, and so we can't decide to subdivide it or even, say, plant hazelnut trees or whatever, or free-range chickens or anything like that. I mean, it has to be used for its intended purpose, which is conservation. So that's the biggest cost. And there was, there was funding. It's the wetland reserve easement is funded through the Farm Bill. And so most of the initial surveys and construction and stuff was covered under that Farm Bill. The additional funds I mentioned with Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board made it be able to accommodate the Oregon chub. Most of it was through grants that was able to done. There was little out-of-pocket expense for us to actually get the easement in place. There's some now. I mean, for the maintenance and stuff, it falls on me as far as, if there's mowing and tractor fuel and those kinds of things. There was little out-of-pocket expense initially.
Neat. Well, and for me, one of the neatest things about it is that even if you sell it, it has to still be used for this. It's permanent. That's fabulous. And for those of you listening who are fans of the TV series Yellowstone, I think you'll remember that Beth came up with the bright idea of putting the entire ranch into a conservation easement so that the state of Montana couldn't take it over via the process of eminent domain. I thought it was a brilliant idea. And so far it's worked. We have to wait for the next episode, which might not ever be filmed, unfortunately. So what are the tax consequences of having something like this?
Yeah, Aileen, that's a good question because that's a concern for a lot of people that do these easement things. But in Marion County, there's a special assessment that accommodates conservation easements. And before, we're in an exclusive farm use zone. It was used for pasture before we converted it to the wetlands and the conservation easement. And our special assessment through Marion County is basically the same as farm deferral. So there was really no change in our tax liability when we created this easement.
Nice. When you mentioned the Farm Bill, I think the whole thing is being rewritten right now.
Correct.
So you might want to look at it because it's not finished yet, but it's almost finished, to make sure all this is still in there.
Yeah. There's a conservation portion of the Farm Bill, and last I saw there was funding in there for these different kinds of easements.
Yeah. Oh, good. On the website of the Marion Soil and Water Conservation District, look at their website and then just put in Dave Boudreau Caring for Wildlife Creating Habitat and you'll find it. It's fabulous. Dave, can you please describe the various parts of this easement and tell us what thrives there?
Oh, wow. That's a big question.
Yeah.
So our property is relatively flat. And so there's only just a few foot gradient between the south end of the property and the north end. And it kind of goes that way. But there are some very subtle changes in elevation, which changes what types of plants grow, how wet they want to be. On our area there, on the 30 acres, we have four principal ponded areas, and the biggest one's probably 4 or 5 acres. The next biggest is probably about 3 acres. And then we have two smaller ones that are an acre or two each, and those are seasonal flooded. So they dry out naturally during the summer. And those can be among the most productive because you get a flush of plant growth and stuff as it draws down during the summer. The two bigger ones, a portion of those ponds have the deeper water that accommodate the Oregon chub fish, which I mentioned initially was endangered when it was introduced to our property, but has since been downlisted, threatened, then totally delisted. So it was the first fish species in the whole United States to be delisted, and in part was because of the recovery in the North Santiam Basin, which we're proud to have been a part of there. So, and then some of the little higher spots that aren't in ponded water, we have wet prairie areas, some that are pretty fantastic in the spring with all the flowering plants and stuff. And then there's some areas that are just even a little bit higher than the wet prairie that would probably still be classified as wet prairie, but they get a little bit more plants, drier plants. We have Romer's fescue, which is a native bunch grass to the Willamette Valley growing there. And so there's some subtle differences in the topography and the gradient, and we get a little bit different plant growth in those different areas. And then we do have kind of a woodland area that's relatively small but has cottonwoods and fir trees and things like that. But for the most part, it's just open grassland, prairie, wetland stuff, most of the mm-hmm. acreages in that.
And I think that the prairie is the most endangered type of area in the United States, isn't it, that it's been plowed over?
I mean, it made good farmland, so that's how we grow our food and those kinds of things. And grasslands are one of the more imperiled habitat types, for sure.
Yeah.
And that's what we're trying to maintain, the early cereal grassland stage on our easement as long as we can. Because if you don't do any kind of disturbance, either fire or mowing, then eventually trees and shrubs and other things like that will move in. And so that's an annual thing, is just to create some disturbance out there. Primarily right now, I mow about half of the easement each year in late summer after all the nesting's done and all the flowering's done and that kind of thing. And just to try to keep that early successional grassland prairie habitat.
Nate, and you mentioned that this is exclusive farm use, but you got permission to have this type of thing there. And I am sure I should have looked at the 19 land use goals, Oregon's land use goals. I'm sure this is under one of them. So now back to the chub and the ponds. It said on the website of the Soil and Water Conservation District that students come out and take samples and do counts. And are they from OSU or where? When is that?
We certainly make the property available to tours and education and those kinds of things. We've had a number of graduate students from Oregon State University. We have two of them currently working on the property right now. They're not specifically working with chub. One of them is looking at macro invertebrates, larger insects and different things in the pond. And it is related, I guess, to the fish, because they're looking at a number of wetlands in the valley, some with native fish like what we have with the Oregon chub, some with other fish species, or some with no fish. And so that's one student. And then we have a student that's just started in this last year that's looking at much smaller, plankton type things. And they're actually using equipment that was developed by the Hatfield Marine Science Center to do ocean sampling, and they're trying it out in freshwater for the first time. And so they're actually out just this last week.
God, that's fabulous. Also on the website, it lists all these neat bird species, flower species, and general wildlife species. Can you just go through the list of all the things that you have seen out there?
Yeah, I do keep a track. And birds have always been my interest since as long as I can remember. I can remember being 5 years old and watching the hummingbird feeder at our house. I mean, birds have always been my thing. So I do a weekly walk-around bird survey. And so that's how I keep track in it. And each year I get about 100 or just over 100 different species that I see in a given year. But then those aren't necessarily the same ones each year. And so that's how it gets up to where I think so far we're up to about 130 species seen on the area. But we also get things that just move through. Like this year, for the first time, had a river otter in one of the ponds and took a picture of that. And we get the normal, raccoons and striped skunks and coyotes and things passing through. We've had Townsend chipmunks, which are a native chipmunk that hang out. And so we get mammals like that. We don't get deer very often, black-tailed deer, but occasionally we do have
I have black-tailed deer.
Yep,
send them over.
Yeah. We had a couple this summer that wandered through. My wife looks out and she goes, there's deer in the front yard. And I go, they're going to head for the garden. And sure enough, they did. Fortunately, they didn't do much damage and they didn't hang around. But and then things like muskrats and things have colonized the wetlands and use those. As far as amphibians, we have red-legged frogs, which are a sensitive species that are there, and of course tree frogs, which in the spring, starting usually late January, you get some temperatures up around 55 degrees, and the tree frogs really start going in February, March. It's pretty loud with tree frogs out there and stuff. And then salamanders and just typical wildlife, which you'd expect for the Willamette Valley. And, you know, as far as the birds, it's really some birds are only there during the migration. They just stop by on either north or south migration. Other ones, you know, will not be present in the winter but are present in the summer. They show up to nest, and then they nest, and then they head back south. And then other ones are around all year round. So you get migrants, you get birds that use the area to nest in the summer and then fly south for the winter. And then we also get birds that nest farther north and that winter, like most of our waterfowl that will spend the winter in the Willamette Valley after nesting farther north. So,
did you notice a change after the fires, the bad fires in, was it 2020? The horrible fires that we had?
No, I can't say we saw anything relative to that, you know, as other than it was a pretty miserable about 10 days following those fires with the smoke and stuff.
I know.
But as far as change in wildlife use, I can't say that we noticed anything.
Okay. And for those of you just tuning in, we're talking with Dave Boudreau, retired professional wildlife biologist who has created a fabulous 30-acre haven for wildlife on his rural land near Turner, Oregon. Tell me if you ever get a pileated woodpecker. I've seen one in my life.
I actually did a few years ago. I heard them and went back there, and it was pecking away at a cottonwood tree that we had on the property there. And it was around for a few days, and I watched it and then it would fly off toward the town of Turner when it left. But it came back a couple days in a row, and that was just a few-day period, and that is the only one that I have seen in our property. We don't have, again, most of the easement and the conservation easement isn't treed, but we do have one little kind of cottonwood and fir stand around one of the ponds there, and that's where it was at. But I have seen pileated there, yeah.
Can you describe some of the varieties of flowers and plants that you have there?
Sure. And that was one of the things when we first moved in there and kind of tipped me off that we had wetland potential. There were some plants out there that, even though it had been farmed and grazed and stuff, we had things like it's tufted hair grass is the common name. I was going to say the scientific name, but tufted hair grass, which is a native wet prairie grass species in the valley. It's very common. It gets very tall. And so we had some plants that were already there. Popcorn flowers, another wetland plant that we had there. But now we have a whole variety of things, and it's kind of neat because they start early. Like we have things that are fairly early, like Oregon saxifrage, which sends up things early. And then we get things just blooming periodically through the summer, a variety of things. And then we have narrow-leafed mule ear flower, which is kind of a balsam root. It's kind of a sunflower-like flower that's very attractive to insects and things too. And then late fall, we get things like aster and Douglas aster there's still some of it blooming right now even out there. And so starting, February, March till now, we have a whole range of plant species that bloom out there.
Neat.
Yep.
Oh, and back to the wildlife. Have you had a bobcat?
Have not seen a bobcat on the area. I do have some trail cameras set up around, and it's always fun to try to see what might pass through. We've had some pretty unusual, like one time I caught a domestic goat on our trail camera. Our entire property's fenced. It was there in the afternoon, and that night we never saw it and never saw it again. None of our neighbors have a goat.
Weird.
But we had a goat show up for one afternoon into the night, but haven't had a bobcat. We do, we've had other things like mink and different things show up, but no bobcats yet. No.
Yeah, we had one. And it's still around, I think, but I've only seen it twice or three times. But I think you helped. I think I sent you a picture and you said, yep.
Yep.
So it was pretty creepy, but it was fun to see it.
Yeah, they're not uncommon. We're kind of out in the middle, you know, surrounded by open fields, and it's not great bobcat habitat. We're, you know, if you're in the foothills there, it's pretty expected that you might have some bobcats around.
Now, I have another question. People are starting to think about not having lawns because of fertilizer and just a bunch of things. People are starting to just plant, like have little mini prairies in their front yard. Is that, and then the problem also with that is that there's all this information about fires. We're not supposed to have anything near our house. I hate that because the fire prevention for one's house, if you don't want to have plants and everything, then we're just reducing more and more habitat.
Yeah, well, there's certainly a number of things you can do there. And that's not the fire issue is not lost. In fact, and I'm not the expert on this. In fact, I suggest someone, if they're interested, call the Marion Soil Water Conservation District, because some of our staff participated in an event that was held at the Oregon Gardens in Silverton that talked just about those kinds of – there are fire-resistant type plants that you can do landscaping around, still provide pollinator habitat. So there's things that can be done that still reduces fire hazard and yet provides, you know, things that, you know, either pollinators or other things can benefit from. So there can be a conservation benefit while not having your monoculture lawn and still provide a conservation benefit with a variety of shrubs or other, you know, plants and still reduce the chance of or risk of fire.
Fabulous. So, yeah. So if people are interested in finding out more about how to get involved with this, even if they don't have a large property, who would be their first contact?
Again, I might be biased, but I would suggest the Marion Soil and Water Conservation District. You know, they don't do the wetland reserve easements or other things, but they can point you in the right direction if we can't help. There's technical expertise there, and there are some small grant opportunities, too, for landowners wanting to do conservation things on their property that the district does provide.
Okay, fabulous. All right, well, Dave, unfortunately, our time is up today. We've been speaking with Dave Boudreau, who has a fabulous 30-acre conservation easement. We want to thank you so much for coming in today and giving us this information, which I didn't know how neat it was until now. And so I hope our listeners have enjoyed hearing about this really neat resource that we have and can share the information with other people who might be able to do something similar. So you have been listening to Keeping Oregon, Oregon. We'll be back Wednesday, December 6th at 8 a.m. regarding other issues relating to Oregon's landscape and our land use planning system. Thank you for tuning in.
Aileen, thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming in.